When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on.
There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
To save his life, call his wife,
and hey, 406! McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We got one more hour until the warm-up show, 888-808-1019. Let's get it going. I just wanted to clear, that Ken Rosenthal thing, I just wanted to clear it up. If, you know, I saw a tweet that completely misrepresented the story. He's blaming Major League Baseball, not Pete Alonso. But Pete Alonso's an all-star because he wants to be in the Home Run Derby, and it might have had some collateral damage, which is his two teammates, and clearly not Pete's fault. And Major League Baseball, in my opinion, has a responsibility to put the best players in the game. It's not about the Home Run Derby. It's about the All-Star Game. And I understand the nature that sometimes these contests are even bigger than the game, and the numbers might be bigger, and it's a television show, and it's a business, and I get it. But they have responsibility to put the best players in the game. And what's going to stop the next guy from saying that? Or, you know, someone get a cheap all-star. And also, you know, these are in contracts sometimes. Guys get paid on all-star appearances. The whole thing just bothered me. Whether it was someone blaming Pete Alonso, whether it's actually Major League Baseball listening to Pete Alonso, whatever, the whole story just pissed me off. But now we move on to other things that piss me off, like the New York Yankees, because clearly they pissed me off. And yesterday's first inning is the epitome of what's going wrong with this team. I mean, the first inning is from everything, from the team's ineptitude to the terrible starting pitching to just some of the weird, quirky things that have gone against them. And that's not, people see, you can't say anything other than they suck. And they do. But a ball getting hit off the balcony in one of these stupid catwalks in that hideous building to start the game is just incredibly frustrating. Where, I mean, just that first inning, they're dying for any kind of positivity, get out to a lead, have an opportunity to win a series. You get Verdugo, who's moved to the leadoff spot with a base hit. Soto, who's been slumping, finally comes through and laces the double into the gap, and you've got second and third, nobody out to start this game. Judge can't get the job done with a short fly ball, not deep enough for a sac fly. And then Rice and Glaber strike out. They don't score any runs. Harken back to really the two Met games, which were the real disasters of first innings. They don't get anything going. And you know Nestor on the road has been awful this year. You know how familiar Tampa Bay is with him. They open the game with, oh, Diaz absolutely owns Nestor. And he hits a ball in the air that Grisham gets a break on. And from I've watched baseball my whole life, it looks like he's got a beat on it. It doesn't look like it's going to, the angle he takes isn't even a trajectory of going back towards the wall. It looks more across the outfield. And then all of a sudden he's got some sort of rapid direction change and the ball's off the wall after hitting a catwalk. And you know the way the rest of this game, not just the inning, but the rest of that game was going to go. And ultimately this offense that did get 8 hits and had 6 walks, 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. Judge is in a brutal slump. Nestor sucks on the road. Volpe is a shell of the what we thought was the budding superstar that we saw the first month of the season. And they've lost now 7 of the last 8 series. They're 0-7-1 in their last 8 series. And having said all of that, I'm still going to give you the silver lining of Baltimore has not been able to take advantage of it. In these 3 games, they actually picked up a game on Baltimore as they were swept away by the Cubs. And the New York Yankees enter tonight with their ace, their guy, their $326 million man, Gerrit Cole, on the mound to try and win one last series before the All-Star break and try and pick up a game in this division where they're still the first wild card, 3.5 games up. And they are only 2 games back besides being the worst team in baseball for a month. They are still right there in this division. And something needs to change. And hopefully he can get started with Gerrit Cole. Huge start for Cole tonight. And then, of course, the Mets will take on the Colorado Rockies after sweeping away the Nationals. Lindor comes through with Nimmo comes through with a huge double in the fifth. They put up another big inning, another crooked inning, which is a hallmark of this offense through this torrid stretch that they've been on, where they just have these big innings. Even with two outs, they put on these big innings, and that was the case in the fifth inning against Gore. And Nimmo gets the big double. They put up five in that inning. Away they go. They win 7-0, sweep away the Nats. Look to take on one of the worst teams in baseball, the Rockies, and they've just already thrusted themselves to being tied for the third wild card, which is remarkable considering where they were. And not only does Nimmo rip doubles, but he tells the general manager what he should do in the postgame, saying this team should add, and he's 100% right. All is right with the Mets, and the Yankees are falling apart. 888-808-1019. Let's get to your phone calls here. Mike in New Rochelle. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Chris. Good morning, man. How are you doing?
Good morning to you. What's up, bud?
Give me a little 2 seconds right here. I got my daughter down in Orlando on vacation with my mom. Happy birthday, Mia. I love you. Daddy's here working hard for you. I can't wait to see you when you come back. It kills me that I can't be with you on your birthday, but when you come back, it'll be worth it, man. I love you, and I'll see you when you get home. Anyway.
Oh, isn't that nice? Mia has a wonderful father.
Yeah, Mia Sky. Mia Sky Bombay. What a name, right? That's actually my last name anyway.
Bombay?
Like
Gordon
name.
Bombay?
Yeah, like the coach.
Yeah, you know, like the coach. Bombay. Hey, Gordon Bombay, man, my hero.
There's only about 12 of us left.
There's only 12 Bombays left in the whole world?
Yeah, in the United States.
Oh, my God. I had no idea the Bombays were on the verge of extinction. I had no idea.
Yeah, we all had girls.
Oh, well. Never too late, my friend.
You'll be watching your martini, drinking with your martini Friday night. I'll be sipping on some scissor, whatever. I'll be sipping on something, but I really want the Mets to just bang out the rest of these games. I want to sweep. I really want to go into this All-Star game, you know, up three, more, you know, positivity. And like you said, you know, like I was doing my route today, and that's what I heard, you know, with Sal and BT, and I love him. I named my cat Sal and BT, you know, this and that.
You are some character here, Mike. You named your cat Sal and BT?
Yeah, it's on the FAN the Facebook page. I took a picture of them. But for Christmas,
I'll have to run right to the fan Facebook page and find that Sal and BT cat.
Sal the cat version is like all over the place, and BT just looks in the mirror and is just in love with himself.
Oh, it's two. It's two.
Like the real people.
Is it two separate cats? Is it two separate cats, Sal and BT, or is it one cat?
No, it's the. I picked up two because I work two jobs, so it didn't make sense.
So you need
to
two cats. Makes perfect sense. I got it.
Yeah, so I picked up two brothers. You know, so they're two brothers,
sure.
And my daughter's name
no
is Sal and BT.
I get it. Listen, life comes in bunches. That's the whole, you know, that's what happened. Noah was a big Sal and BT fan, and he had two jobs. So he said, hey, two of every kind. It's true. You have two jobs, you need two cats, clearly. Makes perfect sense. I'm losing it. I'm really losing it. Ralph, what's going on? Ralph in New Haven, what's up, bud?
Ralph New Haven, the Bryce Harper son.
The Bryce Harper father, yes.
Father.
Any more, you know, you want to knock anybody else in the name of Bryce Harper's greatness? Anything else this morning?
No,
what do you got?
He's been hurt. He hasn't been playing.
He's been hurt. How about that? I know. Well, I think he's supposed
to
come back.
They still went 500 with him out of it. Him and,
amazing. Do they even really need him? That's the question. How good could he be if they still win without him? That's what I want to know.
I was puzzled. We actually swept the Dodgers just now. That was amazing, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 months ago, most Yankee fans and most of FAN had the Yankees as having the best player in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Hill, I believe, was 6-2 or 7-2. He was one of the best pitchers in baseball, they were calling him.
Yeah.
And then you had the best 1-2 punch in baseball with Soto and Judge.
Yes.
So, and then they wanted to, everybody was saying, well, Cashman needs kudos for what he did.
Yes.
Now, nothing against Cashman, but Cashman didn't want to get Soto. He had to get Soto. Okay.
Well, I mean, what is he still got it. I mean, that's what does that mean, you know?
No, he had.
Does he not get credit because he had to?
They had to overpay for him no matter what. They had to get him because they lost out on the Japanese pitcher. They had nothing going. But, okay, you got him. That's fine. But to me, he didn't build up the pitching staff. He didn't build up the rest of the lineup. Now, two guys don't make a lineup. That's my feeling. That's what a lot of some Yankee fans hear.
But, I mean, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing I'll tell you. They got Verdugo, right, who Judge told them to go get, who they expected to be better, who has been a serviceable Major League Baseball player, an average baseball player. He's a great defensive left fielder. He's done nothing. Yeah. They had a young Volpe. Gleyber Torres hit 25 home runs and had an 800 on base percentage, 800 OPS last year. Like, to make it seem like they had no reason to think anybody else would be successful in this lineup, I mean, it's just guys are underperforming. That's part of it, too, no? I mean, you make it sound like they throw two guys out there and then just take outs. Like, Volpe has to be better. Gleyber Torres has to be better. DJ LeMay, who had an 800 OPS in the second half last year, he's won two batting titles. Like, they got to be better.
But to me, it was working 2 months ago, and now it seems to hit a flat spot. Are they going to jumpstart this team by having Cashman go and get somebody?
Of course.
Or do you think this team is going to be just the way it's built
now? No, they're going to go, he's going to attack the deadline. There's no way around it. How could he not attack the deadline? They're going to be in a position to be a playoff team. This is a all-in year. He is going to try and make trades. And I was talking about this with Fliegelman, actually. Here's the question. In this weird new trade deadline with all these teams making playoffs and everybody still in it, and who knows who's going to declare themselves buyers or sellers, we know the Yankees are buyers. I don't think there's any doubt. The question will be, in previous deadlines, Brian Cashman has been unwilling to make deals he's uncomfortable with. That's it. Is he willing to make a deal that he may be uncomfortable with? Is he willing to give up more prospects than he'd like? Do you have to give up how much do you believe in this team? How much do you believe this is an all-in year? And are you willing to give up Spencer Jones for a player who really helps you now, but you don't know about the future, and you have these visions of Spencer Jones, Judge, and Dominguez, you know, playing the outfield for the next 6 or 7 years, and that's the vision you have in your head? Or do you say, screw it, I have to go win this year, and I'm willing to trade a prospect who I don't know will be any good. We thought Volpe was going to be great, not so much right now. We thought Dominguez was going to be great, and he's shown flashes of it, but now he's, you know, been injured for going on a calendar year. Like, we don't know. And so is he going to be willing to trade more prospects than he'd like for a player that's going to help? Or is he going to go out there and look for the second best player where he's more comfortable giving up those kind of prospects? Because he didn't go, you're right. I mean, listen, they traded for Soto. They had to have Soto. Could they have added another impact bat? I mean, I suppose there weren't really that many out there. He could have went out and got Bellinger and given him a big contract. They didn't do it. They could have went out there and got either Snell or Montgomery to really bolster the rotation. They didn't do it. And now at the deadline, and we always joke, you know, it's always said, pencils aren't down until the end of the deadline. Are they willing to go out there and really sell their top prospects? I don't think they'd give up Dominguez, but will they give up a Warren? Will they give up a Spencer Jones? Will they give up, you know, some of these really top prospects that they like for a player who might not be someone who they'll have massive control with for the next couple of years? Are they willing to do that for a rental? Are they willing to do that for someone who is maybe at the second half of his career or something along those lines? I don't know. They weren't willing to do it for Castillo, although a couple of years ago everybody says the package that Seattle gave was better than anything the Yankees could have given anyway. But they went with Montas instead of, like, there's other scenarios. There are times when they do go out and get the best player, and then there are sometimes they don't. What kind of year will this be? But there's no doubt they're going to buy. Danny in Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Kicking playing. I know that the game was not great yesterday. I have to say that the bats were better, but
yes.
Cortez, I don't know what's going on with him, but he can't pitch away from Yankee Stadium. He looks like he's lost pretty much.
Yeah, it's hard to explain why he's so bad on the road, but the splits are just remarkable.
Yeah, it's insane. He's like 0-5 on pretty much away. But yeah, but I'm excited that Cole's going to be starting the series with Baltimore.
Yeah,
we got Gill. Hopefully he'll.
Yeah, you got Luis Hill. You got, and then of course Rodon, the final game before the All-Star break. But you've got.
Definitely, yeah.
No, but, they got the two best pitchers.
I'm excited with Cole because, you know they say, everybody wants a piece of $1 million man. So, you know how it is.
So. I do know, Danny. And I'm hoping that Cole gets them off. Like, listen, this is an opportunity. They struggled against the Cubs. They didn't score runs against the Cubs. And we always look at it from our side, and I understand why. And the Yankees have certainly struggled. They're the worst team in baseball over the last month. I'm not trying to hide that. But we never look at it. Like, right now, if you look at it fairly, because we would say, oh, the Yankees had an opportunity. The Orioles got swept. If they would have won this series, they could have went in. If they would have won yesterday, they would have entered the series. The game down would have blown opportunity. Well, let's be fair. Over the last 3 weeks, the Orioles have had a real opportunity to separate themselves from the New York Yankees, and they haven't. Like, if this were the other way around and the Yankees were battling and, playing average baseball or battling with the Orioles, and the Orioles were the worst team in baseball for a month and hadn't won a series since June 12th and haven't won back-to-back games since June 12th and had the worst record in all of baseball since June 12th, and all we did was gain two games, I don't think the Yankee fan would be that excited right now. And after getting swept by the Cubs heading into a series against Baltimore, I think we'd all be expecting, geez, this is where Baltimore figures it out. But we don't look at it that through those lenses, and I understand why, but that's my job. That's why I'll put those lenses on for you. And I will tell you right now, Cole on the mound going against a Baltimore team that's rotation is in shambles because of injury, who hasn't scored runs as of late, and is playing their worst baseball of the year as well, although not as bad as the Yankees. Still their worst baseball of the year. This is an opportunity to win this game and take this series. And they have to go out in there and do it. And to me, two things happened. Let's just focus on the one, because the lineup, they scored two runs, won a game, and they did get eight hits and six walks, but that's not the story. It's more the 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. But the one thing that did happen is this disastrous bullpen has kind of come together this series in Tampa. Let's just be fair, right? Clay Holmes got a relatively easy save. You saw Weaver come in a big jam, get a double play ball. We've seen Tompkin now be good for a long extended period of time. He comes into a game, gets a big ground ball. You feel like Hill, the lefty they brought in, has done a really nice job for them and kind of has that weird side angle arm action that's tough for lefties, and he looks fairly competent. And now Cousins, his last two outings, has been someone who's come in and looked pretty good. And someone who might give you some length as the underbelly of the bullpen. But right now, the last couple of games, the bullpen was excellent. This bullpen that's been terrible over the last month has started to shape up a little bit. And now if you can get Cole tonight with a bullpen that's still relatively rested and guys who have been performing better, plus a lineup that, couldn't get a run in, but did have eight base hits and six runs, against a Baltimore team that just got swept by the Cubs. Let's have a little bit of optimism. Why not? It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't cost you anything. Let's just see if they could turn this thing around, because I promise you, the Yankees are not this bad. All right, they might not be as good as the first team for 50 wins and the best team in baseball and everything that they were for the first 2 months. I think that's clear. They're not that good. But they are not the worst team in baseball. They've played like it for a month, but that is not who they are. They're somewhere in between. And somewhere in between might be good enough to win a series against Baltimore heading into the All-Star break.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Testaverde will take the snap, go to one knee. This game is over. The Jets lock up their first playoff appearance since 1991 on a 21-16 victory over the Miami Dolphins.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, so we've talked a lot of baseball today, as clearly a disappointing game from the Yankees and a disappointing lifetime, feels like. There used to be a world where they won the World Series every year. I swear it. It's true. I remember it. And then, of course, the Mets sweep the Washington Nationals. So we spent a lot of time on baseball as they are a wild card position, and Nimmo is declaring that the front office needs to go make trades. So we've spent a lot of time on baseball. But let's mix a little football in just for a second. As I just saw a video, I think I saw McPherson retweet it, but showing Daniel Jones working out. Looks fairly calm, you know, looks good. Hopefully he's healthy. We know how important his legs are. But he looked good and healthy, and we'll see what he could be. And this is the year of Daniel Jones, as decreed by the general manager, Joe Shane himself. The year of Daniel Jones. And as we prepare for this year, and as we saw, you know, Aaron Rodgers recently at a golf tournament, and he's back from wherever he was, Egypt or whatever the trip was, and I fully expect him to be healthy, and hopefully he can be what he's been his entire career and help the Jets. So it's kind of the year of the quarterback with both teams. One, to find out if the Giants have one, and two, to find out if the Jets can win a championship with one. But talking about Daniel Jones, I saw something on Twitter. Actually, Fliegelman tipped me off to it. And Patrick Peterson, who is a, you know, great cornerback, 13-year NFL career, three All-Pro honors. He's been to 8 Pro Bowls and could be very well onto his way to the Hall of Fame. He was on the All Things Covered podcast, which had a guest host Brandon Jacobs. And so they were talking about the Giants. And he was asked about Daniel Jones. And this was Patrick Peterson's opinion of Daniel Jones. And I'll be honest with you, this is what scares me. And now, sure, he's just one player, but he's a cornerback who has gone against every quarterback you could possibly go against. And he's had a long NFL career. And this is what he said about Daniel Jones. I had an opportunity to play against Daniel a couple of times. Ain't nothing impressive about him to a defense, Peterson said. He's big and strong, but he hasn't shown us arm talent. Not like crazy arm talent. He's shown us an inability to read defenses quickly, to get the ball out quickly, and I just think he has a problem dissecting the 11 guys on the defense. His process is too slow to excel as a great NFL quarterback. He has talent. He has all the measurables. It's just not coming together on the football field. And we have heard countless, and I don't know why, but we've seen a lot of guys, whether it was when he got the contract or whatever the case may be, the rest of the NFL. And we've seen lists where he's, you know, 29th of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL, which I think is a bit much. Even me, the Daniel Jones hater, I suppose, although I don't hate him. I feel like it's time to move on from him. I've seen the Daniel Jones. I've seen the year of Daniel Jones, and I've seen where it goes. And that's my fear as well, because I think his legs are so important to him, because I don't think he reads the defense very well, and I don't think he gets rid of the ball very well. And for him to not have his, I don't know if he has his legs. I saw the video today. Hopefully he does. But I don't know if he can run. And if he does, I'm concerned every time he gets tackled while running, he has a neck injury. So that's just the injury part of it. Then I would tell you, I think that, yes, he's had a poor offensive line, but he doesn't get rid of the football. Plain and simple. He doesn't get rid of the football. And I don't care who your wide receivers are. In today's day and age, when it's harder to play corner than ever before, and you watch these quarterbacks make names of all different receivers who then go on to do nothing. I mean, Eli Manning, think of all the wide receivers, you know, that Eli Manning had who then did nothing when they left. I mean, it's, you know, Mario Manningham got a big contract to go to San Francisco. I never heard his name again. And other quarterbacks who, you know, Nico Collins, he's a, you know, big name now with the Houston Texans. It helps when you have the great quarterback. And just watching Daniel Jones, I feel I'm concerned his ability to read the defense. I'm concerned his ability to get the ball out quickly, make decisions. Because I honestly feel the 1 year that he was good and took them to the playoffs, and to be fair, beat Patrick Peterson and had a great game, and the Minnesota Vikings. His skill set and the way Dave's got the best out of him was one read. If it's not there, tuck it and run. And that can get you possibly on a last place schedule 8-9 wins. But it's not going to take the Giants where they need to go. And I heard this morning or this afternoon talking about how many games we feel that Daniel Jones is going to play, and Evan doesn't think he's going to play many games at all. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, especially when you take into the account his contract and the idea they're going to try and get out from under it. As we've seen, they were willing to desperately try and move up to third, as we saw in Hard Knocks, desperately trying to trade with the Patriots to get a different, new, young quarterback in there. If he gets hurt, which he is prone to do, and ends the year on the IL, that money becomes guaranteed. So the question will be, not only can he stay healthy, but he has to play well and win. Because we've seen the situation in Denver with Russell Wilson. We've seen the Giants are not going to want to risk a injury-prone quarterback getting injured at the end of a dead season to guarantee money for next season. So Daniel Jones, who hopefully will start the year healthy, has got to prove me, Patrick Peterson, and anybody else who said anything about him wrong fairly quickly. Go out there and win with this roster. Prove that the offensive line is revamped. Prove that with weapons like Neighbors, you can go out there and actually throw passes to wide receivers. And prove you can win football games. Because if he doesn't do all of that within the first few weeks, we are going to be counting down the days until they're fearful of an injury and moving on from Daniel Jones. So, I mean, that's the issue the Giants have in the year of Daniel Jones. How long does that year even last? Brett in Long Island, what's going on, Brett? How are you?
that's funny.
What's going on, bud?
Now you're reaching. It's 1-0 me. You're reaching.
Why am I reaching?
Patrick Peterson's a washed-up old 40-something-year-old cornerback.
He's going to end up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's done. He got lit up by the Giants. Of course, he's a bitter guy. Like,
right,
stop.
Sure.
He said he can't read the defense. He can't read defense. He read the Vikings defense and actually had the best game of his life.
He certainly did.
I don't know. That is the most silliest thing. And you're using that as an example?
Oh, my God.
You're losing it, man.
I don't think so. I think that is one of the great quarterbacks in the league over the last 15, 20 years, giving you an opinion on a quarterback. I should take your opinion over his, clearly, because you're on top of your game. I mean, his opinion means nothing.
How did the Vikings defense do against a quarterback that can't read defenses and get rid of the ball? That's what I would ask him. How did he do? That's his example.
It was one of the worst defenses in the league, and he had a good game against them. I said it as I read the quote that he was part of the Washington team, the Minnesota team that he beat.
And it's funny how we can say and dismiss it every conversation. Oh, the Vikings had a terrible defense all year. They were overrated. Mm-hmm. But when I try to say, oh, well, the offense of the Giants that year, they had, like, the worst offensive line. They were rated, like, 31 on the offensive line, or maybe even less.
I don't know.
But, like, that gets dismissed.
I think the Dolphins were worse that year. No, it's not dismissed.
Oh, that's what I said. What, 31, I'm saying. But we can't say that. But right away, again, the Vikings had the worst defense. They were overrated. They weren't as good as their record.
Yeah.
You know, all that. The
problem is that's one defense of the Minnesota Vikings. You're talking about every year of Daniel Jones' career. When you mention the offensive line as an excuse, you're not saying the 1 year of Daniel Jones had a struggle with an offensive line. You're saying offensive line was so bad he couldn't function. That's every year of his career.
Honestly, forget the stats and everything. Honestly, you watch the Giants, you probably watch every game like I do. Have you ever felt, wow, Daniel Jones has, like, he played five seasons? Did you ever feel he had an offensive line that you were happy with? Like, wow, this is a great line. He's got all day to throw.
No.
Like the 49ers, Cowboys of the past, even Philly. Like, that's all I'm saying. And that's my thing. I want to see what he looks like, right?
Right.
With a line that gives him some time to read a defense.
Okay.
Not Purdy reads the defense. He's got 4 or 5 seconds with Trent Williams and these guys blocking. Those aren't excuses. I just want to see what
I understand
looks like.
That, but what I'm telling you is the exact same thing. The last pick in the NFL draft can go play for an offensive line that gives him 7 seconds and has McCaffrey and has all the weapons, and then I don't need to pay $40 million for a quarterback who can only succeed if he has all the time in the world, all the weapons in the world, a fantastic roster. So if you're waiting to see that from Daniel Jones, if you're waiting for the Giants to fix their roster to the level of the Eagles and the Cowboys Cowboys and the 49ers, then wait all you want. But I can't do it. And it's much easier to not pay the quarterback who can't overcome any of those situations $40 million and expect to win when it's year six now. And he's been hurt half of that time. That's my only point.
CJ Stroud, like your argument too is, oh yeah, CJ Stroud.
Yes.
You also know, Chris, the Texans offensive line have two all pro line. Like, have you dissected?
Yeah, I have. Did you see the offensive line the year before?
They have a really good offensive line.
I think they have an average offensive line. Did you see the offensive line the year before? I mean, the numbers for that offensive line aren't outstanding, and they were terrible the year before.
I'm talking about last year with CJ Stroud.
Yeah, but CJ Stroud,
you said that. Tunsil
was there the year before. Tunsil was there the year before. How'd the offensive line do? Tunsil was still there. The quarterback helps the offensive line. Getting rid of the ball quickly helps the offensive line. It's all a mesh. They all work together. Daniel Jones might not have a good offensive line. He does exactly zero to help them. Zero. He doesn't get rid of the ball quickly. He doesn't read defenses. And if you think it's ridiculous because you know better than a guy who's played 13 years in the NFL and has been to 8 Pro Bowls, then I don't know what to tell you. And if you think that information is ridiculous and unworthy of airtime, I disagree with you. When I'm talking about the quarterback of the New York Giants, and I have a veteran cornerback who could very likely end up in the Hall of Fame, I feel his opinion on that on said quarterback is relatively worthy of at least listening to. Doesn't mean he's 100% right. I agree with you. It doesn't mean that he was beat by Daniel Jones? Sure he was. And I said it when I read the quote. Does that shape every aspect of, so I mean, can we expect Tom Brady to be fair to the Giants considering they beat him in the Super Bowl when he discusses things? I mean, his opinion is completely void because he was beaten one game over the course of his 13-year career by, I mean, I still think it's a valuable take. And I think it's part of the problem and what we've heard from other guys. When he got paid, it was a problem in some aspects, depending on who you listen to, within the team who felt like Saquon Barkley was the player who led them and not Daniel Jones. And the reaction league-wide was, how the hell is Daniel Jones making $40 million a year? Never mind the fact when I first heard $40 million a year, I laughed. But it's Daniel Jones who laughed all the way to bank, and now he has one more opportunity. But I am nervous that he won't even get that full opportunity. Because if the Giants aren't winning, they're not going to play him. They're not going to play him because they can't risk him getting hurt at the end of the year and having that money become guaranteed. So he's got a short little window to go out there and perform right away and win right away.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, Thunder, 451. McMonagle here with you. Let's get as many calls as we can the last 9 minutes to the warm-up show on this Friday morning. Let's do a rapid-fire style. Rocco in Saratoga. What's up, Rocco?
Good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
They're off at Saratoga.
Yes, sir.
Off. Join Patino. Join Parcells. Francesca, you coming up, dude? You coming up?
I would love to. I don't know if I have the time, but that would be a lovely trip. And you know, Mike's never invited me. I don't know. I got to give him. I got to figure out a way to get invited up with Mike. I know he goes there pretty much all of August. So.
Yeah. But what did you say that he didn't like?
Oh, I don't know. Probably countless things. But no.
yeah, we know, Chris.
I was going to say, and yeah. I mean, McGonagall, it was funny because I saw, like, I was flipping through either, I think, Facebook or something. I saw, like, this Pinstripe Alley or Pinstripe Bible or some Yankee podcast. And they said, you know, New York sports radio host calls out Juan Soto. And I was like, I bet you that's probably.
Oh.
And so I click on it. It's me. And sure enough, they're like, overnight host at WFN, Chris McGonagall. And I'm like, my God, never going to shake this McGonagall. All right, good. What do you got, Rocco?
Yeah, hey, tale of two cities, the two teams in New York. The Mets have been hot the last month. The Yanks have been cold. You know these things change over a long season. This has been misery with the Yanks.
Misery. Rocco, I know I shortchanged you there, but such is the life of the rapid fire caller. Maury in Belmore, tonight is your night, bro.
All right, two things real quick.
Real quick.
Tonight is your night, bro. If Jones is still standing at the end of the year, then he's okay, but I don't see it happening. Mm-hmm. Now, with the Yankees, I'm trading my shortstop. I'm trading bullpen. I'm trading everyone, Torres, as many people as possible. Put all hands on deck. Let's see what happens. And if it doesn't work, we get rid of Boone. We get rid of Kirsten.
Well, I mean, you're gonna trade Volpe?
Volpe, I'm done with Volpe. Bring me Correa. No, I'm being facetious, but I feel like we may have to get a little crazy and get rid of maybe do something crazy like that.
Yeah, I don't know if they're gonna do anything crazy like that. I think they still have hope and faith in Volpe, what he showed you early in the year. I mean, they're gonna make trades to help bolster this team. I wouldn't count on the shortstop though. Pat in the Bronx, what's up, Pat?
Well, Chris, doesn't it behoove us for Alonso not to have a great year so we can re-sign him a little cheaper?
I mean, theoretically, yeah, that sounds great. Don't you need him to have a good year to win?
I like him to have 30 and 100. I don't need him to have more than that. We got a great hitting lineup.
I hear you, but I want him to win. Like, say, don't you want to, like, and then his money, no matter what he does, say he goes 30 and 100 or he does something really drastic and goes 28 and 85 or some miserable season, and then he wins games for you in the postseason, his money still goes up considering his track record and now a postseason series. Like, the Mets, yes, it's in their best interest if you're looking to save money. Why are you looking to save money with this owner? I'm looking to win. I hope Pete Alonso has a freaking amazing year. I hope it makes it difficult to resign. That's the whole point. It would have been, now in hindsight, the Yankees didn't win the World Series. Would it have been better for a Judge not to hit 62 home runs in his walk year? I mean, I suppose, but I think we all enjoyed it while it was happening. Liam in Blue Point. What's up, Liam?
Hey, Chris, real quick. I don't think you should trade Volpe. And I think the bullpen's looking really good.
It's looked better over the last 2 days in particular. I feel like Tonkin is like legitimately an answer right now. He's been great. Weaver seems like legitimately an answer right now. I mean, so those are two guys right there. Clay Holmes, Weaver, and Tonkin. I mean, you got to feel pretty good about. Canely has been okay as well. And now you mix in Cousins, who's been really good. Hill, who's been good. And it feels like they have some guys they can go to here in this bullpen. And hopefully it's turned a corner. But again, we got to see. They go to Baltimore, and we'll see if the bullpen can continue on this path that they've started the last 3 days.
Yeah, I just think it's a turning point somewhere, so it's good to see.
No doubt. It's been better. It was a disaster. It's been better. Yesterday, the second game, the game they won, the middle game of this series, they won 2-1. I mean, every time they got out of every jam. They made the big pitch when you needed it. It wasn't overpowering. They don't have a lot of guys that get a ton of swing and miss. And they need some swing and miss in the bullpen, no doubt. I've had this discussion a lot. You don't absolutely have to have your closer be a strikeout guy. Clay Holmes, as long as he's pitching well and being successful, clearly, he's good enough. He pitches his style, his brand of pitching is perfectly adequate to be a closer. There's no doubt. He can be a dominant closer. You don't have to strike everybody out. But your overall bullpen, the entirety of your bullpen, can't be void of all like strikeout guys. You need some. You need at least one or two guys who come in and blow people away, as you know, because like you can say that and still them be not average relievers who give up runs. Velocity does give up home runs and guys get hit, but you do need some guys who come in and miss bats in situations. You need a guy you can go to, bases loaded, one out, to get a strikeout, right? Yeah, the ground ball's great. Don't get me wrong. Love the ground ball for a double play, but sometimes you just need to come in and get the strikeouts. And they don't really have anybody to go to where it's like, all right, come in. We don't have room for any contact. Come in and strike somebody out. They don't have like any of it. So while I think you don't have to get the closer who strikes people out necessarily, I mean, that's great too. Ultimately, sure, my best reliever should be a guy who strikes out people, but it's not a necessity. But the overall bullpen can't be void of strikeout guys. So they need to add some relievers who do strike people out. There's no doubt. So they need K's in the back of their bullpen. They need some strength there. And yeah, they're going to need a couple hitters. They're going to need one. Hopefully Stanton and Dominguez come back. Even Birdie comes back. If you can add a legitimate guy like McCann, and McMahon in Colorado, or you can get a Rengifo, or just someone who is you know, or Jonathan India. You had one guy like that who can help the bullpen, help the lineup. Plus, you get Dominguez, Birdie, and Stanton back. I mean, I feel like it. You know, you're going to need better years out of, again, I can't say it enough. Volpe, Torres, Verdugo. They're not going anywhere. They need to be a part of the team. They need to be better. If they're not better, the Yankees aren't going to do enough. I mean, you can't just count those three as a loss and add one guy, add two guys. Like, those three guys need to be a key figure in the lineup. They just do. It's too much of the core of the team. Next year can rebuild the team and have different core, and they should have. I wanted to trade Glaber in the offseason. You can't do it now, and he just needs to be better. And Verdugo needs to be better. That's why they moved him up to leadoff, trying to get him fastballs. Dan in Long Beach. What's up, Dan?
Hey, yeah, we were talking your boy Daniel Jones.
Yes.
Man, just not in the right system. Like, you're talking about the offensive line, things around him, like, oh, Tim Tebow coming out. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, other people, like, look at that guy.
So you think that Daniel Jones and Tim Tebow are unsuccessful because of the situation they're in, and Rodgers is successful because of, like, that's the only thing separating them. Rodgers, Jones, Tebow. All the same, it's just that Rodgers was lucky enough to be in the right system. Interesting take, Dan, on the show. Interesting take.
McGonagall.
WFAN overnight host had a interesting take on Juan Soto. Chris McGonagall.
McGonagall.
That's true. Never going to shake that damn name. All right, that's it for me for now. I will see you at 2 o'clock this afternoon, filling in for Tiki with Evan. Looking forward to it. So I'll catch you then. Fliegelman, thank you. Thank you for the callers. Thank you for the listeners. I'll catch you guys later. See you at 2. Have a great weekend. Catch you later.
McGonagall.